Many community stakeholders are interested in building communities that are both socially cohesive and diverse. However, a new report suggests these goals may not be attainable. Using a computer-based model, MSU sociologist Zachary Neal determined that segregated neighborhoods are more socially cohesive than diverse ones. And Zachary Neal joins us now to break down this paradox. Welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Your report analyzes the relationship between diversity and socially cohesive communities. Let's break this down. When you're discussing a socially cohesive neighborhood, what do you mean? What does that neighborhood look like?
Right. Well, what we have in mind by a socially cohesive neighborhood is the sort of neighborhood where each individual, each resident, has the sense that everyone knows who they are, that residents look out for one another, where we see patterns of social networks and relationships that are dense or what we might describe as tightly knit.
Mm-hmm. And when you say diversity, a lot of people will think immediately of racial diversity. Is that what you mean as well in this case, or is there more to that?
Well, we're certainly interested in racial diversity in this study, but we're really interested in all kinds of diversity. So we're also interested in ethnic diversity, in diversity by income or social class, diversity by education. So we're really interested in all different kinds of diversity. Certainly racial diversity is one that comes to people's minds, but it wasn't necessarily our sole focus.
Okay. So cohesiveness is predicated on the establishment of these networks, as you put it. What factors influence how people build these networks?
Well, that was really the piece that we were trying to build on in this study, and we focus on two forces that generally guide how people form relationships. The first is the tendency for birds of a feather to flock together, or what we call homophily. It's a general tendency for people to have more opportunities to run into others that are similar to themselves, and so more likely to form relationships with those sorts of people. The second force that we look at is the effect of proximity, of nearness. And people, likewise, have more opportunities to run into others that live near them or work near them or go to school near them. And so relationships tend to be geographically clustered. And what we see in these models is that when these two forces work together, homophily and proximity, we get this finding that we observe, that more segregated neighborhoods tend to be more cohesive, and more diverse, integrated neighborhoods tend to be less cohesive.
Hmm. So the less socially cohesive it becomes, the more diverse it is, a neighborhood is, the less socially cohesive it becomes. Well, the more segregated a neighborhood is, the more cohesive it is. How did you arrive at that conclusion exactly?
Well, certainly we've seen this sort of finding in many different empirical studies. So this finding that there's a relationship between segregation and cohesion is not the new piece of this story. The new piece of the story is what's causing this relationship. Now, we weren't able to conduct an empirical study of real-world neighborhoods. That would be problematic because, for example, we can't ask a person to live in a diverse neighborhood and ask another person to live in a segregated neighborhood and tell them, well, we'll come back in 6 months and see how things are going.
So you worked with a network or a computer model.
Exactly. So we built this computer model that allowed us to create simulated neighborhoods, and we could create very segregated simulated neighborhoods. We could also create very diverse simulated neighborhoods, and we could create neighborhoods that were at any level in between. And so we'd create these simulated neighborhoods and then allow people in these neighborhoods to form relationships by these principles of homophily and proximity. And it allowed us to look at the sorts of social networks, the sorts of social patterns and cohesion that might emerge in these sorts of neighborhoods.
Now, your report appears to suggest that segregation can actually pay dividends, that it can be a good thing. And saying that in 2013 just sounds wrong. Does this report suggest that we should reconsider the way we understand communities and segregation specifically?
Well, I think the take-home message from our conclusion is, as we hear from lots of different studies, certainly from our doctors, from others, that too much of something is often not good for us. And so what we find is too much cohesion might be bad for us, and too much diversity might be bad for us. That what we're looking for is not so much a completely diverse, completely integrated world, but also not a completely cohesive world, but some sort of balance. If we lived in a completely diverse, integrated world, our social lives would feel fragmented. They would be hard to navigate. We would not run into the same people time mm-hmm. after time.
Yeah.
Likewise, if we lived in a completely cohesive world, we'd find ourselves walled off from other points of view. We'd fall into the trap of groupthink and emerge with very narrow perspectives. And so what we're really suggesting in this study is not to try and maximize diversity or to maximize cohesion, but to change the focus of the conversation to finding an appropriate balance of the two.
Very interesting. I think some number of people listening might hear about your study's conclusion and say, well, that's not the case where I live. Or they might look at New York City or Chicago and say, hey, they're racially diverse and they're cohesive. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that's a really interesting counterexample. We might think of, say, New York City, Manhattan, or Chicago as places that are very diverse, very integrated, but also have a strong sense of community, a strong sense of civic pride.
Right.
The thing we have to remember about these places is that at the city level, they appear very diverse. But on the ground level, on the street level, they're actually really quite segregated. These are places that often get described as cities of neighborhoods. They have Chinatowns and Koreatowns and gay enclaves and these different pockets of segregated pockets of diversity. And so what we see in these places is a patchwork of segregated neighborhoods that by being stitched together in this patchwork makes segregation work, makes segregation possible in a way that isn't problematic and in a way that still builds cohesion.
So you're suggesting that segregation can pay dividends on a relatively small scale.
Exactly. Bringing like-minded people together provides a sense of comfort, a sense of order. But having these segregated patches near other patches also brings an element of diversity into the picture. So it's really an issue of finding a balance.
We're talking with MSU sociologist Zachary Neal about his most recent study in which he studied the relationship between cohesive neighborhoods and diversity in those neighborhoods. You know, what immediately comes to mind is the Scandinavian countries are often cited as obviously bigger than a neighborhood. We're talking entire countries here that are remarkably, I guess you would say they are remarkably segregated. There's a uniformity to the values and the ethnicity in those societies. They tend to be fairly progressive at the same time. That's one example of a larger geographical unit where you see this kind of thing in play. It's almost like a neighborhood writ large.
Sure.
Is that relevant here to what you're studying?
Well, I think it could be. It's important to remember, say, for example, when we're thinking about these Scandinavian countries, they're relatively not diverse on racial grounds,
exactly.
Maybe on ethnic grounds or religious grounds, but they do have diversity in other forms. They have diversity in terms of occupation, for example, in terms of interests, in terms of the sorts of music people listen to, the sorts of films people watch. And these are important kinds of diversity also. And so I think that's one of the reasons in this study we didn't want to focus on any particular kind of diversity or any particular kind of segregation. What we wanted to bring to light is that mixing in these ways can occur on many different dimensions, and focusing on just one may leave out part of the picture.
Does it make you want to study this on the ground, though? I mean, you went to a computer model here for this thing. During the course of your study here on this, were you really tempted at times to say, I want to study this on the ground. I want to study this on the south side of Chicago. I want to study this in New York City.
Very much so. I think that's one of the next directions for this line of work. Inevitably, these computer models are unrealistically simple. They can't capture the full complexity of our actual social lives. And for example, in this model, we don't know what effect, say, the creation of a public park might have in one of these hypothetical neighborhoods that could bring people together in an otherwise segregated place or a public school or a community center. And so we need to look at real-world neighborhoods where these actual things exist to see how that might shape and refine the sorts of conclusions we reach in these simplified models.
Society seems to spend a lot of time working on policies and plans to try to build social cohesion and diversity, at least in the neighborhood level, I would say. How is it these features have become so important to civilization, to society?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons, and I think the reasons these social goals have become important depends on the national context. Certainly in the United States, we have a sense of segregation as being very problematic, and we attach racial ideas to segregation when we think about it. And that's led us to pursue diversity as a very strong social goal. On the cohesion side, I think what drives us to pursue that as a social goal, as a social policy, is this nostalgic sense of neighborhoods the way they used to be, where everyone knew your name, where you could borrow a cup of sugar from your neighbor. Now, it may not have ever actually been that way, but we have this sense of nostalgia about strong, dense, tightly knit, cohesive communities being somehow better and being something that we should try and recover. And so we've found ourselves in this position where we, on the one hand, very strongly want to pursue cohesion, and on the other hand, very strongly want to pursue diversity. Mm. And what this study does is ask us to take a step back and rethink what we mean by those two things. Why are we looking for them? And do we really want to maximize both, or do we actually want a little of one and a little of the other?
Who do you want to make aware of what you've found here? Policymakers, community leaders, who would you like to read your report?
Well, I'd certainly like community leaders, policymakers to understand our finding and understand why some of these policies that are focused on pursuing diversity and some of the policies focused on pursuing cohesion may not be working as well as we want them to. This suggests that they may be conflicting, fighting against one another. And this may provide us a path to finding cohesion where we hadn't expected, or a way of pursuing diversity in ways that we haven't tried before. But I'd also like everyone to understand that what this study does is suggest thinking more carefully about what we mean by diversity and thinking more carefully about what we mean by cohesion, why we think cohesion is good or why we think diversity is good, and asking whether the sort of world that we really want to live is in a world that's a little bit cohesive but not completely cohesive, and a little bit diverse but not completely diverse to the point where every person you run into is completely different from the last person. And so it asks people to rethink their conventional notions of segregation and integration, rethink their notions of cohesion and fragmentation.
Well, does your study suggest then that we may be closer to some kind of ideal today than we may think?
Well, I'd be cautious to suggest that there's an ideal. We conclude by suggesting that what we need to find is the appropriate balance between cohesion and diversity. But I don't know that there's one balance that everyone would be happy with or that would be suitable for every community. There are some cases where it may make sense for the residents, for the population, to be slightly more segregated to get the benefits of cohesion. And there may be other cases where the benefits accrue from slightly more diversity and maybe a little bit less cohesion. So the ideal point may be a moving target. It may depend on the culture. It may depend on the people that are living there.
Intriguing discussion. Zachary Neal is an assistant professor at Michigan State University with a joint appointment in the Sociology Department and the Global Urban Studies Program. We've been talking about his latest research. Zachary, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mark. It's been a pleasure.